Scott Burns with a co-author, Susan Garland, both of Portland State University. The title of their talk, Alpine Wetland Soil Development, Niwot Ridge, Colorado.
Hopefully that's close.
Almost. Well, in this session this afternoon, we have been way up north in the Arctic, down in Florida, in Western Australia, and now we're going to the tops of the mountains in Colorado. And this is mostly a morphology type of talk about wetlands. And so I've been working in the Alpine Zone for over 35 years, looking at the soil development in those particular areas. And so this is the beautiful area that we have worked with. This is Susan Garland, who did her master's degree thesis with me. And she came into my office and she said, I would love to do a master's thesis in soils in the most beautiful place in the world you can take me, and I don't need funding. And I said, oh my God, this is great, and we're going to go to Niwot Ridge in Colorado. And this is one of the days that we were out there. The first day we arrived there, it was a snow blizzard. And you'll see snow in some of the photos that we have got here. And this is the area of Niwot Ridge. You can see this is Niwot Ridge, the most studied alpine area probably in the world. And alpine means the area above tree line. And so you'll notice where's my pointer? There it is. These little green areas in here, those are all wetland soils, and then these are, as we will see in just a few seconds, solid flexion lobes and terraces, where we find a lot of these up above tree line. And so there are lots of these soils there, and so we decided, let's take a look at these particular areas. Now, many years ago, I put together a lot of soil developmental sequences for alpine soils, depending upon the position in the environment, the relationship to snow cover, the amount of loess in the soils, things like this. And they have withstood the 30 years out there. They're in many textbooks. But there was one area, the wet meadow soils, the wetland soils, that I only had two soil pits. Yet I predicted that there would be six different types of soils that you see here. And I said, let's go back and test your professor and find out if I am right or if I am wrong. And so this is a little bit risky for me, but at the same time, I had always wanted to find out what was happening. Now, for those of you who've been around a while, most of these terms we don't use anymore. Soil taxonomy has changed since that time, but I predicted that there would be six different types of soils that were there. This was the hypothesis to take a look at. So when we went into the field, number one, we wanted to characterize the variation in the soils on these alpine tundra wetlands. Secondly, we wanted to look at the plant communities, because before we were seeing that certain plant communities told you that certain types of soils beneath them. And then we would use all of the statistical tests in order to correlate all of those, and then put together a developmental sequence for wetland soils in these particular areas. Niwot Ridge, what are some of the characteristics? It's in the Front Range of Colorado directly. It's about 35 miles west of Boulder, Colorado. The area that we worked at, 3,400 to 4,000 meters in elevation, just east of the Continental Divide. And it's part of a long-term ecological research area. There are roads into the area. And the weather turns bad. There is support and many, many years of climate studies that are there. The parent material that we have here is primarily Precambrian gneiss and schist with some granite intrusions. Many solid flexion lobes and terraces, or turf bank lobes and terraces, as they're also considered. Mean annual air temperature, as you can see, negative 4 degrees Celsius. And the mean annual soil temperature at 50 centimeters of depth, just a little bit below zero. In the wintertime, these are snow-covered, and which is giving you the insulation that you have there. They basically don't freeze up. But some of them, you're going to find out, are gelisols. And then your mean summer soil temperatures there. This is an area that was not glaciated. So this is one of these solid flexion terraces that we have in these particular areas. This area, lots of willow vegetation. And we try to vary the types of vegetation in all of these particular sites. So we dug 26 different soil pits in five different plant communities to try and look at the diversity that we had in those particular areas. And we varied the topographic positions and the types of plants. We recorded the field characteristics, everything that we could do for the soils and then also for the plants. We used the Mantell analysis for plant communities there, and then we also looked at indicator species, which are very, very important in most of these alpine vegetation communities that we had had. So the results that we had 43 different vascular plant species with a beta diversity of 4.0. And I just realized when I was going over this morning, I say there were 3 soil orders. No, there were 4 soil orders, endosols, inceptosols, histosols, and gelosols that were there, and 10 large groups that we have, actually subgroups, not great groups. And so on the left-hand side, you can see the classification that we have got. Starting at the, let's see, where's my little point? There it is. The upper part, we have got gelosols, and this is an entic type of gelosol that we have got. Oxyaquic is going to come into this an awful lot, because all of these are jurisdictional wetland soils defined by the vegetation and the hydrology of the areas. And so I was expecting, oh my God, we're going to get aquic characteristics everywhere, redoxymorphic features. No! And so we had lots of oxyaquic types of characteristics. And then humicryops. This particular one, basically, no redoxymorphic features that we have got here. And then fluvoquintic. Now, the fluvoquintic generally you're burying. First of all, buried soils are in them, okay, and that's what puts it into this. But these are not buried by streams. And this was a classification dilemma that we ran into later on, and we'll mention that. And the difference between this one and this one is primarily in the size of the A horizon. This is an ochre capipedon, an umber capipedon. And then as you go down the list, the O horizons start becoming larger and larger, and then you get into the histosols. They're mostly cryofibrous. We got typic and teric, and we'll mention a little bit more about that. And then histic cryoqueps, and then we have a couple more gelosols down there, distrogeleps. And we have oxyaquic, and then we have one with a little bit of an O horizon that is in there. So those are the classifications that we came up with. Let me show you some of these. An endosol profile, it's actually a gelosol. And there is not much of an A horizon that is here. There was in certain areas, but these were right next to the snowbanks. Very, very weak soil development, low organic matter, low vegetation, very, very cold. You'll notice I've got my soil temperature probe in there, and this was just above zero. And in a couple of these, we just dug down, we probed down, and we found ice. And so, again, we think that these are gelosols. This came out an oxyaquic gel orthid, very, very close to the snowbanks. Here is another one of these gelosols, a distrogelep. And here, gelic soil temperatures, O over over an A, or just sometimes an O over a BW type of horizon, but free draining in a lot of these cases. It's sometimes thick histic or even a thin histic in those particular ones. Humicryops, these were sites that had incredible wetland vegetation, but no redoxymorphic features that we found in them. Thick organic-rich horizons at the top, either O's or A horizons, but they were free-draining. Again, something we were not expecting. Then we did get into some of the cryops. So we did get to see some redoxymorphic features in these particular characteristics. You can note by the chromas here, and then the models that we have down in this particular area here. But most of these had buried soil horizons. What was happening in these cases, these were on soliflexion lobes, and the soliflexion lobes are moving continuously. And what happens is that the frontal part then becomes the buried soil as they move over. And Jim Benedict has shown this type of motion 4,000 to 5,000 years for these buried soils to have formed in these particular areas. And so because they were buried, they came out fluvoquintic, but again, it's not related to stream burial. And so we threw out the term fluxoquintic. I'm sure that would not hold up in soil taxonomy, but somewhere down the line, we'd have to describe these, the origin of these morphologically. And then the histosols, and nice, very, very thick histic horizons in these particular areas. The difference between the teric and the typic was primarily in the parent material that was down underneath the O horizons that we have got. And again, poorly decomposed, so making all of these fibrous that we had in these particular areas. And we had quite a few of these particular ones. So one of the first questions that we tried to answer was, is there a correlation between the vegetation and the soils underneath, as we found for every one of the other plant communities that we found in the alpine horizon, in the alpine zone? And the soils, definitely. They were primarily bare grounds in those particular areas. So really, these are gel ants and that you've got there. The histosols had an indicator species, Pedicularis greenlandica, which was a really neat one, which I'll show you in a second. But most of the inceptisols that are in the middle, there wasn't any. There was a great diversity, and there wasn't a good indicator species that was there, much to my chagrin, but we at least tried the hypothesis. But every time that we found the Pedicularis greenlandica, they call it the little elephant head, because when you look at these, it looks like a trunk and then two ears that are sticking out there. And every time we found those, that was a histosol, which was very, very helpful to us, and I thought very nice. Soil development, and I'm always interested in getting from one thing to the next. Most of this is based on what's happening in the epipedon. And the subhorizons, no. So what is happening here is, for instance, on the south-facing slopes, you go from no A horizon into an ochre epipedon, into a humic or umbric epipedon, into a thin histic, and then to eventually a thick histic. North-facing slopes, they were all histic epipedons. You did not have any ochric or humic or umbric epipedons, and you just went from a thin one into a thick one. And then the thickest ones were generally the furthest from the snowbanks. The thinnest ones were right next to the snowbanks because of the amount of snow cover and therefore the amount of vegetation that you have in these particular areas. And the other thing that I pointed out, the lack of redoxymorphic features that we have. As I said, these are jurisdictional wetlands, and for me, and most of my work in Oregon that we have, when we think about jurisdictional wetlands, we find those redoxymorphic features. 15 of the 25 were oxyacquic, which means that the chromas were way off if you did find any redoxymorphic features in those particular areas. Why don't we have them? Well, we have very, very coarse textures in so many of the subhorizons. And when you have coarse textures, then you're going to have a lot of through flow of a lot of the water through the system. So therefore you are not producing the redoxymorphic features that you would normally have. And what we found in the analysis of these 26 different sites, that if we had 75% sand in the parent material, we had no redoxymorphic features at all. And that's fairly logical, you would have. And then the epipedons, how do we summarize all of these for these areas? They were deep, they had high organic matter in them, ranging anywhere from 7 to 75 centimeters in thickness, with the average of being about 36 centimeters. If they were O-horizons, they were all fibric. The pHs, 4.1 to 5.1, so fairly acidic in this area. This is 1-to-1 water. But very, very little gravel, very, very fine-grained, and affected by dust. And the aeolian component in most of the alpine soils is very, very strong there. Subsurface horizons, lots of gravels in these. And dominated by sandy loams and loamy sands in the sea horizons, low base saturations. We didn't find any high base saturation in any of these sites. pH is still 4.6 up to 6.0. The structures, subangular blockies, no clay films, and fairly high organic matter that we had in these particular areas. So what makes these soils particularly different? You get the endosols at the heads of the snowbanks, right next to the snowbanks, and septosols as you're moving out, and then histosols further. And so our proposed soil development, we're going from the cooler ones here over to the warmer ones here, and from the least developed down to the most developed, the cryofibrous that are going to be down here at the bottom. And then we have our gelosols up here in this area. What you're basically going is no or very thin ochric epipenon here, still ochric epipenon, and then we're getting into umbric epipenons, and then thin histics, and then as we're going down, we're going again ochric, umbric and then into the other. So to conclude, the coal soils that we found were primarily found on the northern slopes. 8 of the 10 gelic soils were on the northern slopes that we had. The geleps, which were new in soil taxonomy in 2006, they need to add histic and oxyacquic subgroups that are not there. We mentioned this whole thing about fluvoquintic. It has nothing to do with deposition in streams. What's the word you come up with? We really don't have a good one. But we do get this development from endosols into inceptosols into histosols, and again, it's based primarily on the epipenons. Subsurface horizons, primarily sandy loams and loamy sands that we have got, low pHs that we have in those particular areas, low base saturations, epipenons, also very acidic, but very, very little gravel in those particular areas. No correlation with the vegetation except in the areas where we have the basically no vegetation. Those are the entic types of things. And then in the histosols, the little elephant head. And then subsurface horizons are very, very well drained, and therefore you have oxyacquic conditions, and which blew our minds because we were expecting many, many more aquic types of soils in these cases, and buried soils actually favored the reducing conditions. Thank you.
Are there any questions
for Dr. Burns? Could the cold temperatures be inhibiting the reduction? Well, I think that the answer is possibly yes, but I think the major thing is the particle size and not just having the fine-grained material, and that you are constantly getting water moving through the systems. We dug these pits at the driest time of the year, at the ends of the summers, when the water tables were the lowest, and there were still cases where we would dig the pit and there would be water continuously moving through the system. So it is... it's not getting the reducing types of conditions. But that's a good question to ask.
Any other questions? No? Well,
all right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, just as a quick wrap-up, I'm going to go through the last few talks. Are there any questions for Vernal Pools with Leslie Spokas? Okay. Samira Darubes, canal sediment physical chemical characteristics and potential for pea release in South Florida. Bob Jilks, sulfur minerals cause acidification of aquatic podosols. And then lastly, Lorene Lynn, I don't know if she's still here or not, tundra rehabilitation.
I have a question for Jilks. Situations occur in any American pyritic?
Pyritic? I can't answer that. The question is, do any of the American soils contain the pyritic problem that he addressed? You guys would be the most likely to answer that.
Not that we're aware of. I don't remember seeing any of spotted soils, but I would say that in some of, one observation that has some similarities are quite different kinds of soils, but with our subaqueous soils, these underwater soils, that are quite sandy, we find the development.